Well, I'm sure most of you are probably like me. We found our way beyond Christmas. We've already started taking some of those decorations down. And we've probably started looking at other people who have left theirs up, saying, why is it still up? My wife is pretty good about making sure that we have them down before we go back to the hubbub of school and whatnot, so we don't get caught up in that. So our tree is down, and most everything in our house is down, outside of a few wreaths and maybe some candles and manger scenes. That's about it. So I bet you there are others who have already started dismantling their Christmas things as well. So, and it's that time of year. But when you walk into the church, we have the candles lit, the tree is going, we still have the manger scene here, and everything still looks as if the holiday season is going. It's still going. And it is. As we talked about earlier with the kids, we're still in the midst of Christmas. We're still here. Epiphany has come. Now, I promise you, next week, it's not going to look like this. The greenery will come down. Everything will look back, and it will be back to normal, okay? Because Epiphany will have passed. But we're still in the midst of Christmas season. So what is Epiphany? What is Epiphany? It's the remembrance of the Magi that showed up and appeared to the baby, or to the child, Jesus, when they were there. And we'll find that on January 6th, happens every year. January 6th, we represent, or we understand, that the Magi have appeared. So where does this story come from? And we're going to talk about that this morning. It comes from Matthew's gospel, all right? There are four gospels, we know this, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Only two of those gospels, they tell us the story of Jesus and who Jesus was, born, his ministry, his death, and resurrection. Matthew is the only one that represents in the nativity scene. There are only two gospels that speak of the nativity scene. That's Luke and Matthew. Matthew is the only one that even brings forth the Magi. Okay, Luke's gospel does not discuss it. It discusses the manger scene. Looks very similar, but there are shepherds there instead of wise men or Magi. So it's really important. And I like to look at kind of where Matthew is coming from, or the author of Matthew's text is coming from, because it's important to kind of know where they're kind of leading us in the story. So why are Magi present in Matthew's gospel? If we understand Matthew, or the author of Matthew, is a very common understanding within scholarly circles that Matthew was pointing us towards a very Jewish perspective of Jesus, making us to understand and remember that Jesus was a Jew, okay? And wanted to also, if you read lots of portions within Matthew's text, wanting a lot of the believers to be converts of strictly Judaism, okay? That only people who could follow Jesus would be Jews, nobody else, not Gentiles who are non-Jews. So Matthew's text brings us to a very clear sense that only Jews could be converted to Christians and thus be saved. And that's really important. Luke's gospel, very different writer, takes it a very different direction. Jews and Gentiles can both be saved if you start really looking at the differences there. In Matthew's gospel, if you want to look at the Beatitudes, Matthew's gospel says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Luke's gospel, on the other hand, says, blessed are the poor. All right? Two very distinct, not saying just one spiritual element there. One also, Matthew says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Luke's gospel says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst. So Matthew is coming at this from a very unique perspective. Very important for us to understand that, because he is really trying to infuse a message of importance to this nativity scene. Because instead of having shepherds validating the manger scene, he has wise men, or what some people call kings, coming to validate the Son, the birth of Jesus, the Christ. So it's really giving some leverage to the story. And Matthew likes to do that because this is a very important understanding within his message. All right, let's read Matthew's text here. Let's read it. And I know we've all heard this. It's chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. This is from the New Revised Standard Version. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is this child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at the rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written in the prophet, by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people of Israel.'" That was the Old Testament text being quoted. "When Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared, then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.' When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star, and they had seen it in the rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road." Thus ends the reading of God's word. Thanks be to God. So did you hear it? Did you hear Matthew's gospel really pointing us in the direction of telling us, look, this was an important event. Kings from another land, another nation, followers of another religious tradition, were coming to pay homage to this baby, to this boy. That's something we don't hear everywhere. As I said, Luke did not discuss this. It's significant because this spread the word. This wasn't a local event where only shepherds recognized the birth of the new baby, where only the people there in Bethlehem witnessed and saw what happened. This was significant because it broadened the scope of who Jesus was. It broadened the periphery. Everything could be seen beyond the neighboring nations, as we talked about in the children's moment. People from hundreds of miles away were recognizing the glory of the moment, the significance of the moment. It validated the story. It validated the story to not only the people in Bethlehem, but to those who went beyond it. And also, the nativity scene. We always understand the birth of Jesus to be in Bethlehem. But after you get past chapter 2 in Matthew's text, chapter 1 in Luke's text, you don't hear of Bethlehem. Bethlehem's gone. Jesus becomes the man of Nazareth. That's his home. That's where he's from. Bethlehem was important. Matthew brings it forth, and also Luke, but bring it forth because the Jewish king was to be born from David, King David, in the Old Testament, his line. And King David came from Bethlehem. And so therefore, Jesus, if he were to be and fulfill that covenant with David, was to be the new king. And so therefore, Bethlehem was important within the context of understanding this. So Matthew brings it forth, really wanting to drive home that Jesus was something special. Let's look at the Magi. I find it very intriguing. We must look at these things in a broad perspective. I think that it's important that we not just take them as stories and fact and blend them together, Matthew and Luke's depiction, and say that this is how it happened. We must know there are inconsistencies, some differences there. But I think it's really important that we look at them and see them. Because I think that as we look at the Magi, they give us something really important that we can take with us. That we can take and infuse it into our world and our understanding of how we live a faithful life. So let's look at those Magi. Who were they? Who were the Magi? They were actually probably astrologers or astronomers, if you want. probably coming from the outer reaches of Persia, which is now modern-day Iran and Pakistan, also Medes and Babylon area. So in the first century, they were coming from hundreds of miles away. Now, Judaism, which was who Jesus was a Jew, wasn't able to fully reach beyond that. There were Jews in other places, but there were other religious traditions too. Paganistic worshipers, people who believed different things than the Jews. And these magi were thought to have been Zoroastrians. Okay, if you know anything about Zoroastrianism, it is something that came out of the 6th century BCE, so just after Judaism and beyond, but it's a monotheistic faith. So they were pretty much astrologers who were monotheists, just as the Jews were, but they had a different belief. Their god was named Ahura Mazda, all right? But anyway, so the belief is they were Zoroastrians, which came from Iran, or what we understand as Persia. So it's really important that we understand that. It's a unique tradition. Because it was monotheistic, belief in one creator god, they understand some of the stories that were coming out of the Jewish world, the Jewish texts that were being written in the Hebrew scriptures. So therefore, they knew Isaiah's text before that said a new king would be born, a part of David's line, what Isaiah had spoke about 600 or 700 years before. So they had inklings of what this was. And so that's why they made their journey. That's why they trekked that way to find this new king. All right? Again, it's very, very, the Zoroastrians actually had a lot of influence over the Jews within that 600-year period before Jesus' birth. And so therefore, there was a lot of commonalities between the two. But I want to go back to Matthew, the author of Matthew's text, and really look at it from a perspective of, what is it trying to tell us? Again, y'all have heard me say this before, and I'm going to say it again, because Matthew's trying to do it here. He's trying to prove what we believe. He's trying to prove what he believes. He's validating it by bringing in very important cast members from a foreign land. If you want to say dignitaries, some say kings, some say wise men, scientists, astrologers, astronomers, and validating Jesus' birth with that. That's Matthew's way of saying, hey, this was important. This was something very important. I'd asked my youth just a few minutes ago. I said, which one validates the birth of Jesus better? A shepherd saying this is the king of the Jews, or an international dignitary coming and saying this is the new king of the Jews? All right? That's what difference we're looking at here. That's what Matthew does. And if you look back at Matthew's text, Herod himself was the first one that used the word Messiah. Where was the Messiah to be born? It wasn't the wise men or the dignitaries that were coming, the Magi. It was the Messiah. And it was Herod who even named him the Messiah first. So it's really important. But Matthew is trying to prove why we should believe the birth narrative is important. And I think we fall victim to that as well. We want to prove that this event took place because it is important. Okay, we want to prove it in so many ways. But the problem is, I think that's maybe the only reason why Matthew brought this in. I think that's why he wanted to really give it, provide some oomph to the story, if you will. But that may not be the only thing we get from it. Because if we really look at those magi, I think it gives us a little glimpse of Matthew in a different light, and something that we could probably learn from as well. The Magi teach us about persistence. Persistence. Something I think we can take with us. These Zoroastrians were dedicated. We talked about it with the children. Long journey. Long time it took to get there. They didn't know exactly where they were going. They just knew they were following the star. It would have been over rough terrain, very mountainous, deserts, things of that nature that would have gotten in their way and really made them go many, many, many different ways. All right? They were persistent. They were following the star, what could have been a supernova, could have been a sunburst, whatever it may have been. But we must be persistent too. Just as I talked about with the children, taking time to understand the truth or at least understanding the context in which the scriptures have been written. Taking time to be honest about who, what, where, why, I think those must be staples to our spiritual diet. I think that we should broaden our minds. I think that persistence is trying to better understand. And that's not trying to prove. It's not trying to prove that, hey, we're right and others are wrong. It is simply saying, hey, it's an understanding of our faith, a fuller understanding of our faith. So we must be persistent, understanding everything that comes with it, not just the story itself. So the Magi teach us about persistence. They also teach us about openness. Matthew's gospel usually is not very open. You had to be a Jew to be a convert. That was usually his message. All right, that was most important. If you were non-Jewish, you didn't have as much stake. You could not be saved. That was Matthew's message. But the funny thing is, in the second chapter in Matthew's book, it talks about people who are foreigners, non-believers, coming, paying homage to the new king, to the new understanding of Christ. They do not see themselves as people who were not allowed to come. So it's funny that Matthew was the one that infused this story, bringing forth new people, people who were different, people who had a different belief and a different understanding, a different whole way of life. All right? One of the things that's kind of funny, in my classes, one of the final projects that my students have to do is they have to visit a place of worship that is different from their own. So if they grew up in a Protestant or a Catholic church, they had to either go to the opposite or even go to a mosque, a synagogue, a temple, okay, and experience something new. Now, most of them in the beginning are like, ugh, don't want to do that. That's scary. It's intimidating. I don't know what I'm going to experience there. I don't know if they'll be welcoming to me. Most of the time, there's a lot of hands up at the beginning of the semester. All right, and then I get the papers back at the end of the semester, and they're sitting there saying, I'm so glad I did this. It was a great experience. I got to experience something new, something I never would have experienced before. Our Magi did that. Our Magi lived in a culture, and we're talking about the outer reaches of the what we know as the Middle East right now, Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iran. And coming forward all the way into Jerusalem or the land of Judah and Bethlehem or Nazareth. So it's a long journey. They're going to a new place to experience something that is totally different from anything that they normally experience. So Matthew's gospel, one that's usually not really open to openness, is really showing us in the second gospel that we should be open. That we should be open to new ways. I tell you what, astrology, Zoroastrianism is not always, it's not Christian, if you will, the Judeo-Christian perspective. We don't take that and hug it and say, oh, we love astrology. That's great. We don't do that. That's not welcomed in Christianity. However, that's how they found the Christ child, a new way of finding Christ, a different way. So the Magi teach us about openness. I think the Magi also teach us about faithfulness. So we need to understand people outside our religious tradition who practice something quite different from our own can teach us something about being faithful. I think that's important. They did not have proof that they were going to find something at the end of their journey. They did not have an exact knowing that this was going to end in a place where they were going to find something significant. But they went anyway. They had faith that at the end of their journey, they would find something. We get bent out of shape because we have to have proof. I'm not going to do it unless I know that's going to be the right thing to do. I'm not going to do it unless I have proof that that's the best thing I can do. Or I'm not going to go somewhere if I don't have proof that it is what it says it is. All right. I don't want to go to a restaurant if the sanitation grade is going to be a C, right? I want it to be something practical. So we tell ourselves we have to have proof of something, and that's the problem. But they went and acted on faith. They had no proof that it was going to get them there. Yeah, they had heard the story that Isaiah had said several hundred years ago, that from another religious tradition, that there would be a king that could possibly be born, and a star would lead them there. And a light would show them the way. They had faith. Signs that we are not written scriptures, they didn't have scriptures to follow. The scriptures didn't say, hey, look, in 700 years at this date, you're going to find this babe in a manger, okay? Or you're going to find this child in this house. They simply had a star, and they went on faith, and they acted on faith. So many of us say that it has to be written down. So many of us say that if it's not written, it's not true. So many of us say that it has to be this way because it was written in the scriptures. But the truth is, we're called to be faithful, whether we have proof of it or not. That's what faith is. You have to have proof. Faith is all about doing things because you don't have proof. You just believe and you have faith in it. So I think it's really, really important. So we find ourselves here today reading a gospel message about foreigners, non-believers, being faithful and following a star, an astrological sign that leads them to Jesus, a new way of finding Jesus. It doesn't have to be just through the scriptures. It just doesn't have to be through somebody telling us and having proof that it exists. But an astrological sign showed them the way. Astrology and those who follow it, especially in the first century, are about as outside as one can get to the Judeo-Christian perspective. It is wonderful that even the most traditional of all the Gospels, Matthew, we see a beautiful suggestion that finding new and unique ways of finding and understanding the love of Christ is possible. It's important that we understand and know that.